pull up a chair. I want to tell you about a place that doesn't exist anymore, a place out in the high desert of California, where the Joshua trees grow crooked and the wind never really stops. If you'd driven out there in 1947, past the dry lakebed at Muroc, you'd have seen a low cluster of buildings sitting in the middle of nothing. A ranch house, a swimming pool, a few hangars, a dirt strip long enough to land a fighter on. There was a hand-painted sign out front. It said, "Happy Bottom Riding Club. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and tonight on the hangar, before we shut the doors and turn off the lights, I want to take you out to that ranch. Because if you ever wanted to understand what test flying was really like in the early days, before it got polished up and put on TV, you have to understand Pancho Barnes." Today's show is brought to you by AviationSold.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up to type ratings and command time. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. And brother, the people I'm about to tell you about tonight, they earned every coin and then some. Check them out at AviationSold.com. All right, Pancho Barnes. Her real name was Florence Lowe. She was born in 1901 in Pasadena into one of the wealthiest families in Southern California. Her grandfather was Thaddeus Lowe, the Civil War balloonist, the man who used hot air balloons to spy on Confederate troop movements for President Lincoln. So aviation, you might say, was already in her blood, but Florence Lowe, who would eventually call herself Pancho, did not grow up to be a Pasadena debutante. She grew up to be something else entirely.
She was loud. She was profane. She smoked cigars. She married an Episcopal minister, had a son, and then promptly grew bored of being a minister's wife. So in 1927, at the age of 26, she dressed herself up as a man, signed onto a banana boat headed for Mexico, and ended up on the run with a gunrunner during a Mexican revolution. They escaped on horseback through the mountains. Somewhere along the way, the gunrunner started calling her Pancho. The name stuck for the rest of her life. When she got home, she figured if she was going to keep doing crazy things, she might as well learn to fly, so she took lessons, and she was a natural. By 1930, Pancho Barnes had broken Amelia Earhart's airspeed record for women. She flew a travel air mystery ship at over 196 miles per hour. She became one of the first women stunt pilots in Hollywood, doubling for actors in films like Hell's Angels. She helped found the Motion Picture Pilots Association, which is essentially the union that still protects stunt flyers today, and then came the Great Depression. The Lowe family fortune evaporated. The Pasadena mansion was gone. Pancho Barnes, who had lived like aviation royalty, suddenly had to figure out what to do with the rest of her life. So in 1935, she took what little money she had left and bought 80 acres of dirt out in the Mojave Desert, right next to a brand new Army Air Corps bombing range called Muroc Field. Most people would have looked at that property and seen sand, snakes, and heat. Pancho looked at it and saw opportunity. She started raising alfalfa, then hogs. Then she built a little restaurant for the Army boys stationed at Muroc. The food was good, the drinks were strong, and Pancho Barnes was the kind of woman who could swear in three languages and outdrink a master sergeant. Word got around. By the time the Second World War ended, Muroc Army Airfield had become the most important place in American aviation, because that's where they were taking the captured German jets. That's where they were testing the new American jets. That's where they were trying, as the engineers said in those careful, polite voices, to investigate the transonic flight regime.
In plain English, they were trying to break the sound barrier, and nobody knew what was going to happen when they did. There was a real, serious fear in the engineering community that an aircraft simply could not fly faster than the speed of sound, that something in the physics of the air itself would tear the airplane apart. The men sent to find out were a small group of test pilots, names you might know: Chuck Yeager, Bob Hoover, Jack Ridley, Slick Goodlin, Pete Everest, Scott Crossfield a little later. These were the men who flew the X-1, the X-1A, the D-558, the early Sabres and Starfighters. And every night, when the desert sun went down and the test cards were filled out and the data was locked in the safe, those men climbed into their cars and drove down the dirt road to Pancho's place. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Pancho had expanded the operation. By 1947, the Happy Bottom Riding Club had a swimming pool, a dance hall, guest cottages, a stable of horses you could rent by the hour, and the best steaks for 200 miles. She had a rule. If you broke the sound barrier, you got a free steak dinner at Pancho's for life. The first man to collect on that promise was Chuck Yeager on the evening of October 14, 1947, after he flew the X-1 past Mach 1 over the Mojave. He'd cracked two ribs the weekend before, falling off one of Pancho's horses out behind the bar. He had to use a broomstick handle to close the cockpit hatch on the X-1, because he couldn't reach across his own body to do it. That's the kind of place this was. Pull up a chair, because I want you to picture the bar on a Friday night. The desert wind is rattling the screen door. There's a swamp cooler in the window doing its level best, but it's still 90 degrees inside. The jukebox is playing Hank Williams. There's a hand of poker going at the corner table, and you can already see somebody's about to lose his pickup truck. Yeager's at the bar, Hoover's telling a story, and his hands are doing the flying, and everybody's laughing because Bob Hoover could tell you the phone book and make it funny.
The walls are covered with photographs. Squadron photos from the war. A picture of Pancho standing next to her Travel Air mystery ship in 1930. A signed 8x10 of Clark Gable, who used to fly out for the weekend. A propeller from a P-51 Mustang that some kid from the 200th Fighter Group brought back from Italy. And behind the bar, holding court, is Pancho herself, mid-40s by now, short, stocky. A face like she'd been carved out of saddle leather. A cigar in one hand, and a glass of bourbon in the other. She's calling everybody by a name she made up for them, and most of those names cannot be repeated on the radio. She used to say, "When you've got a choice, choose to live." And the boys flying the X-planes the next morning, they understood what she meant. Because here's the thing about that era. The accident rate at Muroc, which became Edwards Air Force Base in 1949, was staggering. We lost test pilots almost every month, sometimes every week. The X-planes were beautiful, terrifying machines, and the men who flew them knew exactly what the odds were. Some of the guys laughing at Pancho's bar on Friday night would not be alive on Monday morning. Everybody knew it. Nobody talked about it. That was Pancho's gift in a way. She built a place where for a few hours, none of that mattered. You weren't a captain or a major or a civilian engineer. You were just a guy who flew airplanes, sitting at a bar with other guys who flew airplanes, and the woman pouring the drinks had probably forgotten more about flying than any of you would ever know. Now I want to tell you how it ended, because that's part of the story too, in the early 1950s. The Air Force decided it needed to expand the runway at Edwards. A new, longer runway to handle the heavier and faster jets that were coming. And the path of that runway, when they laid out the plans, ran straight through Pancho Barnes's 80 acres.
The Air Force offered her a price. Pancho thought it was an insult. She'd been there 20 years. She'd watched the desert turn from a dirt strip into the most important flight test center in the world, and she'd watered every test pilot who walked through her door. She said no. She said no loudly, and in writing, and in person, to a four-star general. The fight got ugly, there were lawsuits, there were rumors that the new base commander, a fellow named Brigadier General J. Stanley Holtoner, didn't approve of what went on at Pancho's. He didn't like the drinking. He didn't like the women. He didn't like the fact that his test pilots spent their evenings out there instead of inside the chain link fence where he could watch them. In November of 1953, while the lawsuit was still in court, the Happy Bottom Riding Club burned to the ground. Every building, the bar, the dance hall, the cottages, the stables, even the swimming pool got cracked from the heat. The official cause was never determined. Pancho had her own ideas. She always believed somebody on the base had something to do with it. She never could prove it. The case dragged on for years afterward. She did eventually win a settlement against the Air Force, $375,000, which was real money in the 1950s. But by then, the place was gone. The era was gone. The test pilots she loved had moved on to new programs, new airplanes, new bases. The desert was filling up with concrete and chain link. And the long, dusty road from the gate to Pancho's bar simply did not exist anymore. Pancho Barnes lived another 20 years. She moved out to a smaller ranch nearby. She kept flying. She kept telling stories. She died alone in a little house in Boron, California, in 1975. They found her 3 days later.
But here's the thing. When the Society of Experimental Test Pilots had their annual banquet that year, every man in the room stood up for Pancho. Yeager spoke. Hoover spoke. They told the same stories you'd have heard at the bar in 1947, about the stakes, about the horses, about the night somebody flew a T-33 under the bridge on a dare, about the Friday Pancho herself climbed into a steerman and out flew three young lieutenants who said a woman couldn't loop one anymore. Back when avgas was cheap and airspace was free, there was a place out in the Mojave where the men who were trying to break the sound barrier went to remember they were still human. And the woman who ran that place understood, better than the generals ever did, that flying isn't just about machines and missions and test cards. It's about the people in the cockpit, the ones who get to come home and the ones who don't, the ones who spend the evening laughing because tomorrow morning they have to climb back into something nobody has ever flown before. Pancho knew that. She poured drinks for it. She built a fire for it. And when the runway came through and burned down everything she'd built, she fought them all the way to the end because she believed that what happened at her bar was just as important as what happened in the cockpit. She might have been right. If you ever get out to Edwards Air Force Base, drive past the museum and head out toward the lakebed. Way out there on the south side of the field, there's a stretch of desert that doesn't seem to have anything on it, just sand and creosote bushes and the wind. But if you stop the car and walk out into the brush, you can still find the foundations, the cracked tile of the swimming pool, a piece of a wall here and there.
the outline of where the stables used to be. Stand there long enough, and you can almost hear the jukebox. You can almost hear Hoover laughing. You can almost hear Pancho behind the bar, calling everybody by names that wouldn't make it past the censors, telling some young lieutenant to drink up because tomorrow's another flying day.
I lifted most of this story from Lauren Kessler's biography, The Happy Bottom Riding Club, which is the definitive book on Pancho Barnes, and from Yeager's own memoir, which has some of the warmest pages he ever wrote about her. You can find more at RadioHanger.com. Thanks for sitting with me a while tonight. Sleep well, fly safe in the morning. This is Taildragger, closing the hangar doors.